We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.
Okay, fine. Well, then I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. Now, this is just my personal opinion, okay? I know on YouTube, we're going to get all kinds of comments from the friendlies that are just going to be like, these old hags and their opinions, who cares? I'm like, I do. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Welcome back. You abandoned me last week.
I did. Yes. I'm sorry. Did you survive? I mean, you did, but.
Well, it was actually kind of good. I had like a day off because we were like, oh, let's not record. And then you realized that also for Thursday, you were going to have a scheduling conflict. So Amanda joined us. It was great. No big deal. I'm just happy that you're back. I felt was like an eternity that I hadn't talked to you because you were like busy with other friends that you were making.
Well, and let me just tell you, I did not like it's very difficult when you're like hosting a retreat to check in on the news. And I would go to the end of the day and go, oh, my gosh, I don't really know what's going on in the world. Which is great. But then I would try and play catch up and I just felt like it was definitely drinking from a fire hose. But then I would open up the Signal app and you and Amanda had exchanged 77 voice memos. And I just had to realize I'm not going to know anything that happened last week. I don't know. Like, I know nothing. All I would see is like 3-minute voice memo from a Sadie. And then underneath it, it would say, yeah, totally a civil war. And I'm like, wait, what? What's a civil war? What's happening? So it was not ideal for the job. I would have actually the ladies at the retreat come up and go, oh, hey, did you hear about this? Like, actually, I did
and
not.
And you're like, no.
Thank you.
Hosting you. So, I'm spending a fabulous time with you ladies. I have no time for this news cycle.
And it was fabulous, but I was definitely uninformed for the majority of the week. So apologies out there.
What you missed was basically just drama. Because especially since the government shutdown happened, you know, there's been like this void of news because the government shut down. And what has filled that void
is nonsense. It's nonsense.
It's been rough.
Yeah.
So, but before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button wherever you're listening so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday on your podcast, on Substack, on YouTube, on all of the above. Okay. So wherever you want to follow us, go there. If you want exclusive content, bonus content, ad-free episodes, please consider becoming a paying supporter. There is a link in the show notes to join our Substack. Speaking of YouTube, okay, so we launched our YouTube channel. This is a side conversation. I don't even know. We're flowing here, okay? Because the news cycle's been crazy and things have been nuts. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit about what is going on the right. Mm-hmm. There appears to be infighting. There appears to be, I think the undercurrent of all of it is really a jockeying to position of what is going to happen with the Republican Party after, you know, Trump leaves, because, you know, he can't, I know he jokes around about it, but he can't run for president again.
Well, and in politics, everything happens so fast. So even though we can feel like, or the normal man will feel like, we have a long time until the election, every one of those politicians already has their eye. They're moved on from midterms, even. They're looking 2028 and they move fast. Like they start working on that right away.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is a huge aspect of everything that is going on. I think, you know, we have people that want to pull the party further to the right, people that want to pull or gain back power of the party. Think, you know, your more establishment, traditional neoconservative type conservatives. There are so that are just trying to keep the MAGA movement or coalition together. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all of that is bubbling up into these really, I don't know, just like, what's the word I'm looking for? Deflating infighting, where I just really would like for the party to focus on the win and where we are now. Mm-hmm. And admit the problems and whatever issues are happening, but just like this tension, it's exhausting. And that's really what's been happening, especially since the government shut down. And it mm-hmm. all kicked off. I mean, it was there beforehand, but I think it all came to a, what is it when you call like in music, where it just kind of like a crescendo? That's perfect. Mm-hmm. With Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes' interview.
Yeah.
And now it's not even necessarily so much that interview, but these demands are being made to disavow, or who do you want to align yourself with?
There's a lot of positioning, like
a lot of positioning, a lot of like, some of it's like really absolutist and simple. Mm-hmm. And some people who are being much more nuanced are being accused of, are just, I think their arguments are being misrepresented. And so it's just kind of been a mess.
Well, and then you have the Epstein stuff happening, which is a whole other kind of can of worms, because you actually have some Republicans that have for a while been saying, release it, release it, release it. You have Trump calling it a hoax, saying it's all the Democrats. You have Democrats that are weirdly involved with Jeffrey Epstein, stuff like that's trickling out. You have people that are, you know, rightfully looking at players like Massey and MTG.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
And mm-hmm. saying, where were you for the last 4 years asking for the Epstein files? Now, why are you doing this? And so it all kind of meshes together, because lots of people are saying, you know, that's why MTG gave the speech she gave this morning. It was on at the Epstein like presser or whatever. So it's all kind of mixing together. And it is just a bunch of high school drama. It really, really is. And then you have a president that like calls a reporter like a piggy on Air Force One last night. And you, I don't know if I'm the only one, but I just am like, why? Why is this why is this who we are right now? This is
well, I mean, Trump has definitely been lashing out over the last,
I feel like he has been in just a state of irritation for several
And I think that's really
weeks.
Where it's coming from, which unfortunately manifests itself in the least productive way possible.
Yep.
So we're going to kind of try and touch on all of these things a little bit to see if we can together make sense of them. I don't make any promises that that's what's going to happen at the end of this conversation.
It's just a struggle session.
And I also
session.
Don't promise that this
a
is going to be the only
session.
One. What'd you say?
I said it's a recorded struggle session is essentially what
it's
it
a therapy session. I wouldn't necessarily call it a struggle
well, I'm
session.
Struggling. I'm struggling with this being reality. That's what I'm struggling with.
So first, I wanted to open us up with, I actually wrote about this today on my Substack, and it's a free article, and I go pretty in-depth about this particular article and my thoughts on Tucker uh-huh. Carlson, but I don't want to get into the weeds because in my article, I get into the weeds with, you know, podcasts and just other things in general, but I was really surprised. So on Sunday, I got home from church. I told Obed, I was like, we have to go straight home. I have things I got to get to do. I have to do. So we can't like we typically would go out somewhere for breakfast. So in my kitchen, I'm preparing. I see a notification from my New York Times app that says it's an article about Tucker Carlson. And so immediately I'm assuming
it's
like
a hit
most
piece
of these articles that it's going to be a hit piece. Correct. Because we've seen a whole bunch of these, like you can tell that the legacy media, Washington Post, New York Times, like they desperately want to make this battle that's happening within the Republican Party a thing. And they want to bring it to the forefront.
They're loving all of this.
And they also want it.
I was going to say, what we didn't mention at the beginning that's adding to all the tension is the stuff that's happening surrounding TPUSA, Erica Kirk, Candace, and people that are
lining
there.
Oh, that's a whole other episode.
I mean, there's just, I know, but there is just so much drama and so many like large media figures. You know, you got Ben Shapiro in this, Candace, all the TPUSA, Erica Kirk, Trump, Candace, and then you have Megyn Kelly. Yeah. You just have so many players that have defined a lot of the right for the past couple years. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
Well, and then it was funny too, because when I did this article on Tucker Carlson and I gave my opinions on like what he's doing and why he's doing it and everything. Mm-hmm. And somebody left a comment of like, now do Candace. And I'm like, look, it's on the to-do list, but Candace is a whole
other
can of worms. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
There's so much more material to go in there. That's a whole other can of worms. But this article, I thought it was interesting because I assumed it was going to be a hit piece. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Tucker Carlson sat down and did an interview
willingly
with the New York Times. Willingly.
Yep. On his own volition. Like, what?
Honestly, yeah. I remember I sent it to you. I had to read it at least twice to make sure that my reading comprehension was still intact and that I was actually reading what I was reading.
Yep. Can we just mention first how weird it is that he is doing this article with the New York Times? And the reason we say that is because we listen to Tucker Carlson's podcast. We are very clear on where he stands about things. You know, we're students of him and a lot of these other personalities on the right. It informs a lot of the public's understanding of, you know, relevant issues. And if you have listened to even a few of his podcast episodes, he bashes these out. He hates them, or he says he hates them, because that's what you're supposed to say now. And look, I think it's really, really interesting that he decided after, and we're going to get into the actual article, but I just think it's bizarre. It's just bizarre to me that he would all of a sudden be like, I'm okay with them enough to offer them an exclusive interview that he could have given to anyone else. Like,
and he goes to the New York Times. Excuse me.
It's so bizarre. It's just, I mean, he could have done this
weird.
It was kind of, to me, it was a, I hate that term, but he was kind of, it was in the face of Fox News, I think, because he could have given this type of thing. He hates Fox. He talks about that all the time.
He would never go back there.
He could have done. He talks about how the Wall Street Journal's the worst, how, you know, National Review is no longer relevant. He says all these things all the time. So it's like, why are you even offering your time to them, let alone taking them on a vacation with you? I don't know. Anyways, get into it, girl. I just had to bring up that is so bizarre. It was just like, why are you doing this?
Particularly interesting. Not because he's consistently bashing them, but, you know, I think it's real telling because in this article, one of the things he addresses is that he feels that he's being attacked and betrayed by his own, so to speak, you know, by fellow conservatives, and that he's lost some friends in the process.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is fine. But to me, the fact, you know, and I can sympathize with that reaction, but his response is, you know, what we've seen so far is like, well, then do your own interview or do your own thing, or going to the New York Times for an interview as opposed
to really
going
caustic.
To...
He's sharp. It's just very caustic and sharp. Like, he's different.
Like in the face of like, okay, fine. Well, then I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. Now, this is just my personal opinion. Okay. I know on YouTube, we're going to get all kinds of comments from the friendlies that are just going to be like, these old hags and their opinions, who cares? I'm like, I do. That's what I'm here for. So, but I want to go through just a few things in this article. As I mentioned, a title was "Once He Was Just Asking Questions, Now Tucker Carlson Is the Question." And it says, a conservative commentator has further fractured the right with his anti-Israel rhetoric and sympathy for a white nationalist, and he's not in the mood to apologize. And that is perfectly clear from this article.
Mm-hmm.
Now, double checking to make sure that I was reading this correctly, this interviewer, now, mind you, Carlson, at this point, he has already interviewed Nick Fuentes, and he is apparently on the run because he decided to escape the wreckage for weeks of bird hunting in Maine, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Southwest Florida.
Okay. I do not begrudge anyone who has the finances and ability to drop a bomb like he did and then be able to escape the wreckage by going quail and pheasant hunting. I think that's amazing. I would love to be able to do that. But that just was so rich and so New York Times. Like, it's their whole brand. Like, it's so funny to me. But it's that he would invite the New York Times on that trip.
Yeah. Well, it says here, during 3 hours of interviews driving to and from a quail hunting site outside of Fort Myers, Mr. Carlson was by turns indignant, reflective, and seething, and thoroughly unrepentant for having roiled the conservative movement in the interview or his own escalating attacks on those who support Israel.
So my first question is, if they drove to and from, that means that they were with him while he was pheasant hunting, and I want to see the pictures. Like, why weren't those included? I would have loved that.
I just want to, like, this is the guy that was interviewing him. This is the, I can't zoom in.
Robert Draper. He just doesn't look like someone who's going pheasant hunting to me, but I could be wrong.
I really cannot picture that dude with a
pheasant
shotgun.
Hunting. Right.
Yeah. Pheasant hunting. So, but, you know, throughout the article, he especially, you know, he brings up his usual suspects. He has, like, Israel does not matter, which is fine. I don't care about his opinions of Israel. I really don't care about his opinions of Ben Shapiro, per se. My irritation with him specifically of Ben Shapiro is that, and others that he's criticizing, except for Ted Cruz, that he managed to have on his podcast, but even that he's not willing to engage with them.
Right.
So, like, for example, Shapiro was like, hey, why don't we, he's multiple times has offered to talk this out.
Yep.
And Carlson's like, is no.
No.
And even after that aggressive, kind of hostile interview over the summer with Ted Cruz, Cruz approached Tucker to kind of try and smooth things over. Mm-hmm. And again, he said no, he had no interest. So it says here, he says, I have contempt for Ted Cruz, Mr. Carlson said as he drove back from the quail hunt where he managed to bag 6 birds. Quote, not just his public positions, but the way he lives. And then parentheses, Mr. Cruz is in a speech previous this evening saying that Mr. Carlson's interview with Fuentes and that he had, quote, spread a poison that is profoundly dangerous. So, again, like, he doesn't want to, but he doesn't want to talk to Cruz. And I think that's kind of adding to this.
And I think what you're watching and what we're, I have listened to his subsequent podcast interviews or podcasts since Nick Fuentes and the different times he spoke. And there's a real duality happening. It's almost like he's two people. He will say, you know, that he doesn't want anybody to become the worst version of themselves and become evil and, you know, become so full of hate, yada, yada, yada. And he talks about that. So he speaks out of that side of his mouth. And then in the same breath, moments later, he's talking about people like Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Ted Cruz, neocons, how they're the worst, they're evil, they spread lies, they are fine with killing people, and he is doing it at the exact same time. And then he'll kind of like reverse course for a minute and like apologize and say, sometimes I can be the worst version of myself and I pray that I won't be, but I probably will be, even in the same episode. And then he goes on to continually do the things he says that people shouldn't do and that he accuses other people of doing. So it's really confusing. And one has to ask, why is this happening? Why, where's he going with this? Is it just a matter of confusion for him as well? Or is there an ulterior motive to, it's a, like a newfound bitterness and anger that I don't think people are picking up on yet because he's still like a pretty happy clappy type of guy.
Yeah.
But there's,
well, I mean, I have theories
anger there.
I have theories about it. And specifically, I think it has to do with an element of like overcorrection, especially for how he promoted the Iraq war and during his time at Fox News, like an overcorrection of being part of the establishment, being part of the system that led to a 20-year war and so many deaths. And I think he's like kind of trying to overcorrect that. And it's a very simple absolutist mindset of foreign policy. You know, just like what he, the issue with his arguments of us bombing Iran was going to lead to World War III, which wasn't the case, because the president has no interest in getting us into a long war. Mm-hmm. Even what's happening in Venezuela, you know, I think it's fair to have criticisms of the president and what he's doing, but I think he's posturing more than he's actually going to do regime change or invade Venezuela. I could be wrong, but it would be out of his character, and it's not really something that I'm expecting. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, I think, you know, here with this, because one of the things about the Fuentes interview that Tucker did was what a lot of people had a criticism about was that he didn't push back.
Yeah.
And I kind of assumed, I don't know, like I kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt. Like maybe he didn't know enough or
when he was caught off guard and he just didn't give a good interview, which can happen. But as this article reveals, he knew exactly who Nick Fuentes is. And what he was going to say.
In the article, he specifically states, I knew who Fuentes was. I knew it was going to rile some feathers. I knew it would probably cause some issues. But he was like, I thought I could, I could take it. It wasn't going to be a big deal. And then he says, this portion here, he says, acknowledging that he had not prepared much before interviewing Mr. Fuentes, he said, quote, honestly, I was guilty of the same thing I criticize others for, which is judging him by a few 3-minute clips I saw. The two had dinner at Mr. Carlson's house in Maine the night before the interview. The host could see that Mr. Fuentes, who came along, quote, was rattled, like he thought it was going to be a hit or something. In a text exchange, Mr. Fuentes confirmed that he was, quote, very uneasy and thought that the show would most likely be a full-on ambush or at least very negative. Mr. Fuentes added that after the two went over the discussion topics, what the discussion topics would be, he, quote, felt much better and more comfortable.
Okay, so wait, a couple of things about that. First of all, so they've also interviewed Fuentes. And what I want to understand. Did they just call him with a couple
of
questions?
Me, I'm thinking like, because it says in a text exchange, Fuentes confirmed. So I don't know if the text exchange is being shown to him.
I don't know if
the reporter is texting Fuentes. My assumption was that he's being shown a text message.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Well, I think that another thing that could go unnoticed, but shouldn't, if you scroll up a little bit, is when Tucker's saying that he is guilty of what he criticized people for, which is judging him by a few 3-minute clips I saw, which essentially what that sentence reads to me as is he's not as bad as we think. People are just taking the worst parts of what he says and clipping them together and taking them out of context, which happens to people all the time. But it does not happen to Nick Fuentes. Everything Nick Fuentes says is awful. At the very least, extremely bigoted, sexist, hateful, and racist.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Well, I think one of the things is that he can say something. It's like the broken clock is right twice a day kind of, you know, theory. Yeah. So like he can say something that sounds reasonable and you're gonna be like, well, you know, okay, fine. But the problem and this is one of the things that I was kind of a sort of argument that I made in my Substack today is that you have to understand what is the fruit of that statement? What's at the root of that statement? What is the worldview that is guiding those statements? So yeah, I could agree with some of his points and that's fine if you want to listen to him. And some of those points might be valid, but be aware that that's not even to say that those points are wrong because he's filtering them through his worldview. Just be aware that his worldview is not really something that you want to embrace or that is okay to go just because you happen to agree with a handful of things that he says.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would just say a majority of what he says is just gross, really wrong. Yeah. And dehumanizing. And so you can find the things he's saying that we could all agree, all right, that part's not offensive. You can find other people saying that who are not going to fill your brain, your mind, and your heart with a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
And so that is a very telling quote to me that he said that. And then also what we talked about on the back channels yesterday is Tucker knew who Fuentes was. So he had people working for him that knew. So he knew exactly what he was doing when he interviewed him. And then also he essentially is telling us that he told Nick Fuentes, don't worry, I'm going to give you a softball interview. I'm not going to touch on these more problematic aspects of your rhetoric, because why else would Fuentes say, yeah, I felt so much more comfortable after we had dinner and we talked about what we were going to talk about. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, specifically in the article, he says, and this is Carlson, he says, quote, I just want to be clear about this. I knew what would happen, Mr. Carlson said, of the reaction to his anti-Israel posture. Quote, and I felt that at this point in my life, I can take it and it's worth it because I want to force a rational public conversation about what's in our country's interest.
Then and we should have that. But do you have to have that?
I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah.
At all.
Right. Neither am I.
And then he says, 10 minutes later in the interview, though, he returned to the subject of how his fellow conservatives had turned on him, and his unflappability gave way to outrage. Quote, the most dispiriting fact of the last 9 months is that huge portions of the institutional Republican Party all kind of hate free speech every bit as much as the left does, he said. They are every bit as censorious as some blue-haired, menopausal, Black Lives Matter activists, and I just didn't know that, and I'm disgusted, I feel betrayed, and I take it personally. You can totally hear him. I take it personally.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's really an interesting statement, because I think he's conflating
criticism.
People, yeah, he's conflating people in the Republican Party hating bad ideas, and he's translating that into hating free speech. Nobody, I did not see one person saying Tucker Carlson's podcast needs to be taken away. Deplatform Nick Fuentes off of YouTube, although I think it'd be a net good for the world if he wasn't able to be out there talking to 18-year-old boys, but whatever. But nobody was calling for that. People were just saying this was a bad interview with a bad guy, Tucker, and he did take it personally. And in that sense, it feels like to me, it's a little bit of someone who has really, really big feelings and isn't able to actually take criticism when he says so often on his podcast that he doesn't care what anybody thinks and he's totally fine and secure in what's happening. And I think you have that coupled with him wanting to run so far from everything he feels is like the neocon kind of bubble, Fox News, National Review, the Iraq war, all the agencies which his dad worked for.
Yeah.
And he's running in the opposite direction. You know, he changed his look. He kind of rebranded. He got away from the William F. Buckley like bow tie and pinstripes. And he's, you know, a little more folksy now. It's just, you can just sense that there's a lot there that has angered him. And he is now targeting what he thinks the enemy is, which is the neocon right, the Israel-loving
but I feel that
boomer
he's,
generation.
He's doing, like, and I wrote about this. I feel like he's doing it and allow, like, I don't know, platforming. I hate to say platforming because that's not it, because I really don't care that he had Fuentes on. It's the lack of pushback is
right.
What annoys me. Yeah. And I think he did not push back because he was open to his ideas simply because of the fact that Fuentes is critical of Israel and because he had a 30-minute story to tell about Ben Shapiro and how Ben Shapiro is a bad guy and Nick Fuentes is the victim. And you can also argue that Ben Shapiro maybe contributed to the origin story of Nick Fuentes. And you can even make that, I know that was a mistake, but it's just like, to me, it just speaks so much more about the motive and where you're prioritizing things and you're forsaking one for the other. It's almost like he's blinded by his own emotions and anger that he can't be like, he just seems to me, he's just emotion driven and narrative driven. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. Like, you know, everybody has subject to their opinion. They can share their opinion, but I mean, like show some, like be a dude, show some responsibility, show some backbone or something instead of just like being driven by your feelings.
What he said in that one quote where he said that he knew what was going to happen, I think he knew exactly. I don't think he knew that this was going to happen, but I think he did know that having Nick Fuentes on was going to tick off people.
Well, and it was going to make him money too.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Specifically the type of people that he wants to tick off. The old guard, you know. And in that sense, it's, I think he just wants to do damage to the part of the Republican Party, the coalition that he thinks that he has, he does have contempt. He has contempt for the Lindsey Grahams and the Ted Cruzes. He talks about it all the time. And this was just a convenient way to make a lot of those people.
Yeah. To trigger them, to upset them.
Yeah. Right.
So I want, before we move on from the article, I do want to touch on one statement that he shared.
Yeah, I know which one you're going to bring up. I know.
Well, I've had it up on the screen for a hot minute. So I just, this one, I literally like, wait, what?
Yep. Excuse me?
Perdóname? Excuse me? Okay. So it goes, a lifelong Protestant, Mr. Carlson said that he had recently grown, quote, much more devout, and that he had spent a year and a half reading the Bible in its entirety. What drove him to do so, he said, was his belief that, quote, the spiritual war is real in America. He now recites the Lord's Prayer daily. He says, as a guard against, quote, hating people on the basis of their race or just hating them in general. The end.
That one, that's a loaded portion of, I mean, there was lots of gems in this article, but that one, I had to stop. I was listening to it.
That one stopped me in my tracks.
I stopped. I went back and I listened again. And then I messaged you very quickly. And I was like, I'm sorry. Did he just say he has to recite that? Because I recite the Lord's Prayer every day. It's part of our liturgy, morning and evening prayer. I have never one time recited it in order to fend off
racism,
hatred. Yeah. Hatred for someone because of the color of their skin. That's never occurred to me ever. Not one time in my life. And that it's just, it's, I don't understand. He not only thinks that if that's a real thing, but he said it in an interview. Like why?
I don't know.
Am I missing something?
So I shared a screenshot of that in my Instagram stories and somebody replied with, excuse me, Tucker, but the Lord's Prayer isn't a rabbit's foot that you wish upon a star on or something like that. So and I mean, I thought that was an interesting analogy because, you know, that's probably another one of my frustrations that have happened, especially recently, you know, as we've seen things change, is that he will frequently in his conversation will be like,
he'll invoke scripture and Christianity. Yes. It's
and,
manipulating.
You know, this is this and this is heresy and this is what I believe and this is Christian and this is not.
No.
And then for you to go and say, and I just found this. And I feel like he also does that in an attempt to create authority, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, you can trust me. I'm a Christian. Right. You're a Christian. Therefore, you can trust what I'm saying because I'm not going to... Right. I'm not going to guide you or misguide you. Or guide you astray or anything because, you know, we're both Christians. I want to make sure that we're as brothers and sisters in Christ that we hold each other accountable. And I don't like that. I don't like
and I think people need to be really careful about who they listen to. This is why we talk about it a lot. Because when influencers or even pastors, leaders in like this movements that are happening in our country, they'll evoke scripture and they'll use it for their purposes.
Correct.
And they'll manipulate what it actually says. I mean, simple example, last week he was talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and how, look, even a pastor can go and do something horrible like kill Hitler. And you just have to go, wait, what are you saying right now? And it's that he can say these things so flippantly. And if you, it's the same way with Candace. They say things so flippantly and they use scripture and the Bible and being a Christian as kind to prop up whatever, you know, their mission is that week. And that should not be so, it shouldn't be so accepted by Christians, or at least not called out and just say, like, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. Please don't use, you know, the Lord as your mascot for your podcast. You know what I mean? But we're seeing it a lot lately, with especially, I mean, politicians and people who are impacting culture through their influence on YouTube or whatever. And I mean, Fuentes talks about his Christianity. They talked about it in the podcast together. And I'm going, no, we're not going to, we shouldn't be doing this. Please stop.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like everybody's capable of failing and
of course.
But I think we all have to use a little discernment on what type of fruit someone is producing. And yep. I think that speaks a lot as to whether or not when they use this camaraderie to try and connect with you,
mm-hmm.
if it's genuine or if it's, I don't want to say if it, because I don't want to question people, but the thing is, whether it should be trusted. Do you understand?
Right. Yeah.
And right now, there is a lot of that going on. I think it's this idea of, like, you know, religion is back, Christianity is back, it's based, you know, they're wearing it like as this badge of, like, I'm based, I'm not like mm-hmm. those crazy liberals. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have it together or that doesn't even mean that your opinion isn't valid. It just, I don't like that being used in a way to, frankly, I view lower a listener's guard down. And even like with leaders, I don't have a problem with them obviously expressing their faith as political leaders, but don't mm-hmm. use it to manipulate me. I think that's the main thing.
Well, and that's why I find it so interesting that some Christians too have problems when Trump says stuff about God or his understanding of religion, and they're like, he's, you know, this is blasphemous, whatever. And especially like that last time where he said, I don't think I can get into heaven, you know.
Yeah.
And people had a field day with that, but he's being honest about the fact that he doesn't know. He doesn't have a foundation about scripture or about Christianity.
Well, he admits that he's no authority in it.
Yeah. But when people with an outsized amount of influence or any influence at all tries to bring in elements of Christianity, elements of scripture and the truth of, you know, who Christ is, and they use it to back up their very human arguments in a manipulative way. What's sad is that there's a lot of people listening to some of these influencers who are like baby Christians. They're new to all of it. And if you don't have discernment yet to go, whoa, okay, that has nothing to do with the scripture you just quoted or whatever, it's really easy to get led astray and go down the rabbit hole with some of these people who, you know, constantly are doing that. And I've seen him do it and others too.
It's just the other side of the coin where you see like progressives who will be mm-hmm. like, they'll take one singular scripture or a story or their interpretation of how they view Christ, what is Christ like. So it's the same thing. It's just,
it's a
little bit of a horseshoe thing again.
Yes. It's like, same problems on both sides.
So, what's interesting to me about this article is that it answered a lot of the questions that I had after that initial interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it confirms to me a little bit more of what is he trying to do? What is his motive here? I think he exposed quite a few things where mm-hmm. a lot of people have been confused as to what's been going on. And I do think there's a few things here. I think right now, the label of anti-Semitism that's just kind of being thrown around, mm-hmm. I think it's again being overused.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Tucker Carlson is anti-Semitic, but I think he is allowing himself to be blinded by people who are anti-Semitic and that their messages are anti-Semitic because they align with some worldview that he's trying to craft a narrative for.
Right.
And so he's just kind of willing to set that aside because they have other things to say that he agrees with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like it's the same thing with, for example, Megyn Kelly. I think she's just kind of being irresponsible and trying to ride a fence, but I don't think Megyn Kelly is anti-Semitic.
No. I think that they understand. Well, I think, first of all, and you hate to make it this coarse, but they're millionaires. They're making tons of money and profit off of what they're doing. And if Megyn Kelly comes out and sides, you know, against Tucker or gives him a hard time or makes it seem like she disapproved of what he was doing. I mean, she stands to lose a lot of listeners. That's just what's happening. Look at what the fallout at Heritage Foundation, and you've got all of this infighting. And so I think it is good to point out that this is also a business for these people. And I think what happened with, I think that the conversation between Tucker and Nick was less about Tucker interviewing Nick Fuentes. And it was more about him making the right people angry in his eyes. And I think he knew that that was going to happen. I don't necessarily think it was, you know, to hear this guy's ideas or whatever. I think he knew, first of all.
Yeah, he knew he was going to ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, it was going to be sensational. It was going to get millions of listens and make tons of money. And I think he knew that it would make the people he has contempt for mad. And so I think that was a sharp business move. I think he knew exactly what was going to happen, and it did in that sense.
Well, and I think that's probably, for me, most recently, one of the things that have been really kind of like a little bit of a realization that's been really disappointing. Like, we went through this era. I'm actually just kind of realizing this. We went through this era of the legacy media feeding us lies because they wanted to push a certain agenda. They wanted to silence certain voices. And many people turned to independent outlets who, I'm not saying that we can't trust them, but again, we're finding ourselves in entering a space where we have to filter through what their ulterior motives are. Whether it's money, whether it's fame, influence, pushing a policy. And I think that's just the nature right now of what we no longer have the illusion of unbiased media anymore. I just would really like if independent creators were weighing more their responsibility versus their exposure and their influence.
Yeah, and I think that that comes from a meteoric rise for some of these influencers and people in the independent journalism space. All of a sudden, people were like, we're sick of mainstream media. We're going this way. So people got flooded with all of this fame, essentially. And they're kind of having to work out how to handle it in front of everybody. And it's not going so well. And also, I think that when some of these people, Megyn Kelly, Tucker, Candace, a lot of these TikTokers who I don't know about because I'm not on TikTok, but they have like 8 million followers, whatever. What they're realizing is a lot of them started with the viewpoint of, you know, we're just independent. We're on our own. We have no help. It's just little old me, to all of a sudden becoming the juggernauts like MSNBC and CNN and Fox used to be. Now they are no longer these small little cottage industries.
No, they have larger platforms than any of the legacy does. Yeah.
Right. Which makes them the legacy media now. It makes them mainstream media now. And you have to question them in the same way you questioned all of the other people that came before them. And we have to question ourselves. If we grow, as we grow, staying very true to fundamental principles that got us into the work in the first place, and that becomes harder and harder the more opportunities and money you make.
I don't know. I'm so antisocial. I'm like,
and access you get. No, but it becomes a thing where all of a sudden one day you're being asked, can you come here? Can you say this? Can you repeat this? Whatever. And we have to be going back to first things first so we don't lose our way. I'm watching these people kind of, and I'm going, wait, I used to count on you, which was probably my own problem. But yeah, it's a good reminder for us. That's for sure. I've been thinking a lot about that.
Yeah. We've actually been discussing that quite a bit on the back channels. It's like, you know, we've even joked. It's like, we're never going to be humongous because.
Well, maybe that's a gift, honestly. I think that a lot. Someone said that to me actually at the retreat. We were sitting at dinner and we were talking about something I went to, and she goes, I hope you're not offended, but I'm actually surprised you don't have more followers. And I said to her, yeah, so am I, actually. I've been working really, really hard for like 4 years now. And I know other friends that started it like a year ago and they have like triple, quadruple what I have. And then I thought about it a lot that night. And I've told you this, and my husband, yeah. Who knows why the Lord allows certain things and not other things, but heck, maybe he's saving me from myself because you do. I'm very serious. Like you don't know what you're going to be like when you have an extreme amount of influence and access and opportunities.
It takes a lot of work, you know, to just like keep it grounded.
Stay normal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like normal. Normal's good.
Yes. I was wondering, okay, so in regards to, because another thing that I've seen a lot, and we've seen this specifically, I feel like with J.D. Vance.
Mm-hmm.
There is, like, I didn't pull the clip, but I saw it this morning where Jake Tapper is bringing up Nick Fuentes, bringing up J.D. Vance, how he won't distance himself, also bringing up J.D. Vance's assistant, or I think he's a deputy press secretary, if I'm not mistaken, which...
I don't remember. I don't recall.
I have to look, which is Buckley Carlson, who is Tucker Carlson's son. And just to clarify for people, if anybody's been following this ridiculous, this crazy angle of the story...
It is crazy.
So Tucker Carlson has a brother named Buckley Carlson, and Buckley Carlson has been reposting and kind of defending Nick Fuentes' clips. That Buckley Carlson is not the same Buckley Carlson that works for J.D. Vance. That is Tucker Carlson's son.
Confused. They're confusing them. And do not think things through before they post them.
They're both Buckley. But one is a 50-something-year-old man, and the other one is, I think, his son is maybe 23, 24 years old or something. Okay. So I'm trying to see if I have here...
Which, quite honestly, I mean, that's an angle of the story that not that many people are talking about, but how very interesting that, like, Tucker's son works for the vice president, and Tucker is friends with the vice president, or was, whatever, and is, you know... And had on this man who has spoke and said really gross things
horrible
about
things.
Vance. Yeah. And he didn't know about that, or he didn't say, I don't know. The whole thing is just bizarre.
Well, that's kind of what I was trying to get at, because so in 2024, J.D. Vance was asked about Nick Fuentes, specifically the statements that he had said. And he said that Nick Fuentes was a loser and a scumbag. And he's an idiot.
So did Charlie Kirk. So did everybody.
Yeah, everybody has said that. Right. And then, so this most recent thing has happened. And I have found that there's a lot of people that are almost demanding the vice president to comment on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if J.D. Vance necessarily needs to comment on it, because... Like from the plat, and I think I mentioned this to Amanda during the last episode, but from the podium of the vice president, why are you going to put more eyes on Nick Fuentes, especially if you don't like him or you don't agree with him? And also, please remember in the past, the amount of times that Trump was asked to disavow the Proud Boys or, you know, what happened at Charlottesville. And he did over and over again, specifically Charlottesville. And they would just continue to be, well, do you disavow? Do you disavow?
No answer that J.D. Vance is going to give is good enough. My only thing about this is this kid has said gross things about you and your wife. He can't get up and denounce every single person. Yeah, he can't get up and denounce every single person who's done that, okay? J.D. Vance has caught a lot of slack in the past couple years, okay? So he doesn't owe that to anybody. He's the vice president. They're busy running the world, right? The only issue is that J.D. Vance does comment on a lot of stuff. He's very much on X.
Online.
And he comments about a lot of things. So when he doesn't comment about this specifically, especially since Tucker's his friend, Tucker had him on, there's been a bunch of fallout, and he has commented on like the stuff that's happening with Buckley. He knows what's going on. He knows that it's being talked about, and he's not making a specific comment about it. Even though he's making specific comments about other things, it just makes me go, why aren't you saying anything about it then? If you're talking about...
No, and that's kind of where I was getting at. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, does he need to? Also, I think there might be an element here where he... Because we saw... So, You and I saw, I shared it with you. I don't have the clip, but the New York Times did an opinion piece where they're warning people. This opinion piece was kind of setting the stage to warn people that J.D. Vance is going to be worse than Trump.
That tracks, of course.
Yeah. Let me actually, I could probably, because I think Glenn Greenwald shared it.
Okay.
And I might be able to find it because he had a really good take on it. And that's where I'm kind of like, I'm wondering if an element of this is, I mean, maybe, I don't know, like, I really don't think he agrees with Nick Fuentes, okay? First of all, let me just put that out there. I don't think he agrees with Nick Fuentes. So I wonder if there's like an element here of like maybe pride where he doesn't want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
Also, there seems to be an undercurrent of connecting the two to discredit J.D. Vance because he is the heir apparent. And I actually have that. I found the X post here. So Glenn Greenwald shared this, and this is the Jameel Bowie.
Yeah.
I think I'm mispronouncing that. Opinion.
No, that's Vance, right. That's how you say it.
Okay. J.D. Vance is idling at the edges of American politics. And Glenn Greenwald says, very shortly, you're going to hear this from the Democrat media. Look, I had disagreements with Trump, but he kept the crazies on the fringes. The really dangerous extremist is J.D. Vance. Trump, by comparison, is a responsible patriot. Because that's the same thing that they did with Bush and Cheney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's where I'm wondering if maybe, like, he knows and that he's just not wanting to partake. He doesn't want to perform, like, you know, like do the monkey performance of like, I disavow. And then like 2 months later, I have to disavow again, just like what he saw happen to the president.
Well, and maybe
I do agree with you.
He knows voting's coming up for midterms and he knows that he's going to run for president and he wants to keep every single voter who is potentially going to vote for him as Donald Trump's heir apparent, you know, on his side. He doesn't want to alienate this new growing contingency, apparently, of disaffected young men who are listening to the likes.
I don't think
it's a huge group. I just think.
Well, and I don't think they'll necessarily side with him. It's not like, especially like if we're going to talk specifically about Groypers and Nick Fuentes and whatever 10% of that is or whatever percentage that is. They don't like J.D. Vance either.
No, I know. I just think it'll be the lesser of two evils again, especially if it's like for those people. For Groypers and that whole contingency. I think that the Democrats and the media are specifically afraid of J.D. Vance because he has more longevity. He'll be able to have two
absolutely.
Terms. And he will start a new coalition because MAGA will be done with, I think MAGA will be done with Trump. Trump leaves and I don't think that MAGA is going to stick around with the next president. I think it's going to have to be a new vision for how we move forward because that's just, I mean, Trump's going to be out of office. They're not going to have him anymore to kind of run this party that honestly is kind of falling apart right now with him at the helm. So I think that they're afraid of J.D. Vance. He's young. He has a lot of years in politics ahead of him. And he's a powerhouse in a way that Trump is not, just like Trump's a powerhouse in a way that J.D. Vance is not. But I think that
J.D. Vance can communicate, though.
Yeah, very well. And he also isn't as foreign relations flirtatious as Trump is. He's very much more on the isolationist right, which is interesting. So anyways, all that to say, I think the Democrats are very afraid of him. So of course they're going to brand him. It didn't work to brand him as weird like they did in the, you know, campaign. Now they're going to brand him as like even more of a Nazi than they did with Donald Trump, which is literally what they did with Donald Trump. So,
I mean, literally what they did. They absolutely. Literally did.
Well, and I think, too, there's several undercurrents that are in opposition to JD. It's not just the Democrats, but it's also, like you mentioned, JD Vance is more isolationist. And the establishment neocon element of the party doesn't want this, you know? Mm-mm. So I think, there's a lot of, like, I'm kind of looking through all of that as what they're trying to portray him as, because they're trying to filter it through that image to discredit him, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So I do want to, because we are going to be wrapping up here, but I do want to touch on this a little bit, because another, you know, I watch the quad on my TV now of the four major news stations, and MSNBC and CNN have been going nonstop about the Epstein files.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nonstop. It is their primary focus, and specifically Marjorie Taylor Greene and Massey have been making rounds on these outlets.
Right.
And we don't have time to go into the nitty gritty here, but apparently, so today they're supposed to be, I don't know if it's today, but soon they're supposed to be voting.
It's today.
Is it today?
That's what Spear Johnson said, yeah.
Okay. So a lot of this is being framed as the president not, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene is almost portraying this as the president being not staying to his commitments to his campaign promises to the American people. Yeah. And I would be curious to know, what do you think about how she's been making that argument? Like, I have my issues with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think she's posturing herself. I think she is lashing out because she wanted to run for Senate and was not getting the support that she wanted. I looked up her voter, like her record as a representative, and anything that she has sponsored has been pretty much politics. It's been about impeaching Biden, or it's been about some kind of resolution, but nothing, you know. She talks a lot about the economy, the issues that her constituency is dealing with in regards to healthcare and everything, but she has never presented a bill to try to solve any of these issues.
Right. No substantial legislation based
Correct.
On her rhetoric. Yeah.
And now I think she's rebranding herself.
Yes. And I think that's precisely what it is. I think that she saw an opportunity, especially during the shutdown and with this Tucker. Remember, Tucker loves MTG, says she's one of the most, like, honest and loyal and transparent people he knows. So after that interview, I think she saw an opening for once this conversation, the America First conversation, started, where everybody's kind of jumping on either side of this argument. But can we mention, too, that nobody actually understands what America First means, because it can mean like 25 different things to 25 different people, but whatever. I think she saw an opening and she is like, okay, I'm going to realign. She realizes that Trump's not going to be around forever. She could probably have a longer political life if she played her cards right than he will, in the sense, like, longevity years wise. I think she's comfortable in the House of Representatives. She makes a whole lot of money. Some stuff has come out about that this past week. But I think she's just, it reads to me very opportunistic. I could be wrong, and she could totally believe every single thing she's saying. I mean, it is good to ask, if you cared so much about Epstein. I mean, that's her whole personality right now. Why didn't you talk about it the 4 years that Biden was in office at all? There was little to no
interest
about that.
Why didn't you suggest a resolution then? Why didn't you do anything?
Right. And why is that what you're getting mad at Trump about right now? Trump has consistently been like, fine, release whatever. Like, he just wants to move on and do other things. And so it's really interesting she's picking that to be her pet project, when there's so many other things that are happening inside the country right now with the America First mantle that she's taking on. And then she went CNN and apologized. It's just all very weird to me.
So specifically on that, I find it curious, because most recently she's the message that she's trying to portray, or the image that she's trying to portray, is that the president has been in opposition because of the Epstein files, and that he has lashed out at her, because he did lash out at her. He did post and retract his endorsement of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
And now she's painting herself as a victim, because he called her Marjorie Traitor.
Traitor.
saying she's getting death threats or she's afraid she might be killed.
Which, and at one, it's today on the at the Capitol, she even suggested, she's like, I'm getting just a taste of what these women behind me have experienced because Trump is attacking her, which I thought was
like, you mean the
like she's getting attacked and she's like, getting hostile because of the post of from Trump. And so she aligned her victimhood.
This is politics. This is politics, Marjorie. You're playing.
She's trying
game.
To align you her knew. Victimhood with the victims that are behind him or her. So, but this happened because she talks about America first. And this, she went on, I just want to play this one for you guys, because she went on Tim Dillon and talked about the immigration raids. So here we go.
As a conservative and as a business owner in the construction industry and as a realist, I can say we have to do something about labor, and that needs to be a smarter plan than just rounding up every single person and deporting them just like that.
Right.
So, and I'm going to get pushback on that, but it's, I'm just living in reality from here on out. And if I'm, if anybody's mad at me for saying the truth, then I'm sorry.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, ladies and gentlemen, our next president. Sorry, J.D. Vance. Sorry, J.D. Vance.
Okay. That's weird. So is she saying that as a business owner, she employs illegal immigrants? Is that what she's saying?
Well, that's
still, that doesn't feel very America first to me, so.
Then, so she did, and I guess I didn't grab it because she did this. You know what? I do have it. I have it over here. So she did this long video because recently there was this entire debate and discussion about H-1B visas, specifically because the president did an interview with Laura Ingraham and where they discussed the H-1B visa, and he was trying to make the argument of why we need H-1B visas. Now, I talked about it with Amanda during the last episode. I shared my opinions on it. I think under very specific parameters, I think it makes sense to have H-1B visas. Like, I prefer to have the Brainiac here in the United States versus in China, for example. But I think it has to be very narrow and specific reasons. Right? So she did that. That was over the summer, I think, when she did that interview. It was definitely a few months back. So now she has posted for the first time, because I've never seen her do a video like this, where she's talking about legislation that she wants to pass. So, and I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's kind of long, but I, you know, you'll get an idea of what she's wanting to do here. If it, of course, here we go. Hold on. Come on. Here we go.
I'm introducing a bill to completely eliminate the H-1B visa program, which has been riddled with fraud and abuse and has been displacing American workers for decades. There will only be one exemption in my bill, and it will allow for a $10,000 per year cap on visas issued to medical professionals like doctors and nurses who provide life-saving care to Americans. However, even this $10,000 per year cap will be phased out over 10 years to allow us time to build our own pipeline of American doctors and physicians. My bill will also restore the original intent of the visa, for it to be temporary. These visas were intended to fulfill a specialty occupational need at a given time. People should not be allowed to come and live here forever. We thank them for their expertise, but we also wish them well so they may return to their home country.
All right. So it goes on a little bit longer, but her basic argument there is that she wants to eliminate the H-1B completely. And that she doesn't want to have any incentive, essentially, for anybody to stay in the United States after they have used their visa. And I find it interesting because of the contrast between when it's her construction company that needs people to help run her business. She's like, we can't round everyone up. But when the, like, when it's about sciences, when it's about more specialized issues, which would be a smaller group of people, you don't want them to have it. And I get that she's creating a bridge here, but I would think that one of the things that we have that is most attractive to bring talent here to the United States mm-hmm. is the ability to stay in the United States. Also, mm-hmm. I don't know if I necessarily want Elon Musk, for example, to mm-hmm. come hang out here, train people for 10 years, and then decide to go to the highest bidder over, I don't know, in China or Russia or to one of our mm-hmm. enemies.
Yeah.
And then we no longer have that the access to him.
Yeah, it was interesting. It, again, I feel like it's a very opportunistic moment for her to talk about that when she was just saying that we need to be smarter about illegal immigration inside the country. And yet in the video, she's like, we want to create, at the same time we're phasing it out, we want to create a pipeline to create or to produce our own doctors and physicians, which aren't they the same thing? Anyways, and so there's a part of me that's like, why aren't you saying the exact same thing and creating a pipeline for people who work in labor, people who work in the trades? And that didn't seem important when she was saying we just need to let illegal immigrants stay here because we don't have the workers here in America, which we do, and we could. I think it's really interesting.
Again, well, and she posted that video right after that interview.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I'm saying.
It's the timing. It's opportunistic. And she sees that her loyalty to President Trump either hasn't played out in the way she wanted. It hasn't been fruitful for her. So she's taking her shot now.
Well, and I think it's very, because she's like, I am America first and foremost, nothing else. Mm-hmm. America first. And it's like so frustratingly simple. And I say that in the sense of America first, and this gets people upset, doesn't mean that we don't have interest in,
right,
in doing, having foreign relations. I don't want to send my money to foreign countries. I don't want to prop up foreign countries. I especially don't want to do any type of regime change. And I don't want to use it like, you know, I don't know, like Bush was with Iraq, like thinking like we're going to bring democracy to the region by forcing it upon them.
Right. America first just means whatever is best for
in
America.
Our interests.
In our interests. And if that means us doing things abroad and it is good for America and Americans, then okay to that thing. But that doesn't happen as much as we'd like to think. We're involved in a whole lot of things that you could argue are not good for Americans or best for Americans or putting America and her citizens' interests at the top. But people are making it more difficult. People are confused. They're almost, when they hear America first, they almost think that means American isolationist. Like we're going to remove ourselves from the global sphere. No, that's not what it means. It just means that whatever decision needs to be made, if it is good for Americans, then that is the good, that is a good decision.
Yeah. I think that's one of, you know, she's clearly made some significant shifts. And I want mm-hmm. to play this last one for you because I'm pretty sure that you haven't seen it. And it's about 3 minutes long. I've cut it, but you'll get the gist of it. Okay. Right. And I just want to get your reaction on this one. Okay. Everybody listen closely.
My right to say that I think Sharia law and women being forced to wear burqas is the greatest threat to our freedoms as American women. I am 100% opposed to Sharia law in America.
This is June 100%
unapologetically opposed to Sharia law in America.
I got to speak with Marjorie Taylor Greene tonight, and I asked her one of the things I was worried about, which is all this Sharia law Muslim concern I see on X.
Oh, no, my constituents talk about the same problems that plague you and everyone on this call. I've never been to a town hall. I've never been asked about Sharia law at a town hall. I just haven't. I will tell you, I do think there's a paid social media influencer campaign going on X.
If you want Islam and Sharia law, you stay over there in the Middle East. You stay there and you go to Mecca and do all your thing. And you know what? You can have a whole bunch of wives or goats or sheep or whatever you want. You stay over there. But in America, see, we made it this great, great country. We don't want it messed up.
But I think it's a lot mostly on X, and I think it is paid, and it's probably coming from Israel or AIPAC donors.
Do these people think that they're not being videotaped and recorded and that people can't very easily find all of this stuff at the drop of a hat?
That original video was about 3.5 minutes long. And mm-hmm. the dates actually range from 2017 to 2025. But mm-hmm. the last little bit that I clipped it was June of 2025 mm-hmm. compared to November of 2025.
Yeah, that's... She... It's really interesting, too, because when they don't like something that's being talked about, it's AIPAC and Israel.
Yeah.
But then they can shift their talking points around. It's real. I mean, that's like two different people. And I think that she, I don't know if she thinks these podcasts are too small or their platform isn't going to gain national notoriety. But how do you think you can say two opposing things and it's not going to get, no one's going to hear it.
Nobody's going to notice it.
I don't know. She's definitely switching things up. She definitely has her eye on a prize. I'm not sure what
that
is.
And look, that one really took me back because I live adjacent to her district because it is the furthest, largest, most rural district in North Georgia. And it shares the state line with Chattanooga, with Tennessee. Uh-huh. And I can tell you that I went to an event recently at my church. Now, granted, this was at a church and it was I forget the name of it, but it was basically like how to educate yourself in local politics. So it was a civics minded program or session. And one of the questions that a lot of people were asked was what is one of your largest concerns right now? And the issue of Islam, the rise of Islam, was said multiple times.
Right. Yeah.
So I find it a little hard to believe, especially knowing her district, that would have never come up at all a single time in one of her town hall meetings. Now, it's possible it would surprise me.
It would have to. I mean, it's coming up all over the place. It's a conversation that all of a sudden we're all kind of being forced to have because we're seeing the influx and the growth of Muslim communities and the fact that, like in this last election, like 40 different Muslim leaders or politicians were elected into office on the state and local and federal level. It's a conversation that's definitely being had. And for her to say that it's never come up, that must be paid. You get your $7,000 from Israel for saying that. You're it's watching a politician use rhetoric and talking points. Instead of just
that's
being open
like,
and honest. It's really interesting.
She's branded herself for a long time as just being like, I'm just a
Well, she's running for something. She's running for something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what she has her eye on, but she's definitely campaigning right now.
Well, the reports are that she wants to run statewide for either Senate or even governor in Georgia, and that she approached the president for an endorsement, and that the president sent her a poll and said that she could not win an election statewide in Georgia against Ossoff, which is the senator that's coming up for election. That she like came in almost 20 points behind him or something in some polling. And so he said, I'm not going to endorse you because you know how the president
is. He likes to win.
He likes to win.
Yeah.
And that because of that, and since that, she has been lashing out. And that's really one of the biggest shifts or things that have caused a shift in her change of policy, her demeanor, her behavior, her responses to the president.
Yeah.
Of course, the president has lashed out, which is not exactly productive.
No.
You know, so, I mean, nobody's exactly innocent here, if we're going to be completely honest.
Yep.
But to me, that was particularly telling, that last one, because I think that's something that you would especially say if you are concerned about winning a statewide election, where you're just kind of like quieting it down, softening it. And I don't think she's exactly genuine.
No me gusta. No, she's not.
That's obvious.
No me gusta. No.
So we'll see how the Epstein files specifically, to wrap this up, if I were to give a prediction, I think they're going to be a relative dud. And I think it's going to be a bigger issue for any kind of bombs that come out. I think it's going to be a bigger issue for the Democrat sphere of influence than it having anything to do especially with Trump and this administration.
I think so too. I mean, you already have Larry Summers coming out and apologizing and stepping back from, you know, I mean, and if you don't know who Larry Summers is, he worked in the Clinton.
He was the Treasury Secretary for Clinton, and he was also the former president of Harvard.
Yes.
He had a long relationship with Epstein after he had already been
convicted.
Convicted.
Yeah.
Like they were texting. The text that got exposed was because he was asking Epstein
for advice on how to ruin Trump. Of wooing some professor.
Oh, yes, yes.
While he's married, by the way.
Not great. Not a great look. And then you have like another story coming out of the New York Post about Democrats who had the ear of Epstein were texting him. They were trying to figure out ways to, you know.
Oh, I have that. Trump. Do you want to see that real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. So the story.
Okay. I mean, if you can't, it's okay.
No, I have it. So just to give you guys a quick. The Virgin Islands has a delegate, like Puerto Rico has a delegate. So they don't have a vote, but they get a position on committees and that sort of thing. So they get to ask questions. And this was Plaskett. And so she is a delegate of the Virgin Islands, which is where Epstein had property at. And he donated to her campaign. Mm-hmm. And so it was exposed by the Washington Post, I believe, that Plaskett, while she was questioning Cohen, which was Trump's fixer, essentially, during the whole Stormy Daniels fiasco, she was texting with Epstein asking for questions to ask Cohen simultaneously. And so this play-by-play here, which if you guys are listening, I'll read the text for you, but you can see how it plays out if you're watching on Substack.
Me, and it's, I'll take it under advisement now, and it's not a problem in terms of attorney-client privilege. Yes.
So she texts, Cohen brought up Rona.
Keeper of the secrets.
Yes, I will turn it over.
You, as my friend Mr. Meadows pointed out, misled this committee even today in a written.
She's looking down at her phone.
Your testimony. I have suggested you are going to review that. Did you review?
He replies, Rona?
Break to correct the record. Yes or no?
Yes.
Question, you helped out the president's campaign or were involved in the campaign.
Quick, I'm up.
Next, is that an acronym?
I can't, my screen's so small. You read it out for me.
Okay.
As a representative, as a spokesman, even in your words today, it was your idea for the campaign dating back to 2011. Is that accurate? Yes or no?
Yes.
That's his assistant, is what Jeffrey Epstein said.
2011 is a year that sticks in my head. For it's the year my daughter was born, and it was the year I was diagnosed with cancer. I was not then pushing for Donald Trump to be president. I was fighting cancer.
3 minutes later, Plaskett asked Conan about Rona.
You've mentioned some individuals to my colleague from New York, Ms. Connolly, and also in your testimony about Mr. Weisenberg and other individuals, Ms. Rona. Who are those individuals? Are they with the Trump Organization?
They are.
Are there other people that we should be meeting with?
So Alan Weisselberg is the chief financial officer.
Uh-huh. You got to quickly give us as many names as you can so we can get to them.
Yes, ma'am.
As Ms. Rona, what is Ms. Rona's position?
Rona Graff is the Mr. Trump's executive assistant.
And would she be able to corroborate many of the statements that you've made here?
Yes, she was. Her office is directly next to his.
Now, she knows all this already because she's talked to Epstein.
Involved in a lot that went on.
And then it fast forwards 1 minute later.
And I yield back at this time.
Committee will now stand in recess again. We will come back.
Text good message work. From Jeffrey Epstein. Good work.
Listen up. 35 minutes. 35 minutes.
Jeez.
After the.
So that's, I think, a
it's
Democrat.
Be less about Trump and Republicans and a lot more stuff that probably the Democrats don't know that's in there. And it's going to come back to bite them.
Honestly,
we could be wrong. We could be wrong. I'm not an Epstein aficionado.
Oh, I have many thoughts about Epstein. I actually wrote about it in my last paid subscriber newsletter. Like, I did a whole breakdown because it's so obvious to me. And I have a lot of thoughts, especially about what Massey is doing and what MTG is doing and even what Ro Khanna is doing right now. And particularly most of the women that are speaking at these press conferences. And this is not to say that Jeffrey Epstein didn't have underage victims. That's not what I'm talking about. These women that are putting their faces out there and doing interviews and books and all of this sort of stuff, many of them were of age. They were models. Yeah. They were hired. They went back and forth and repeated and saw.
They were being paid and traveling around the world. And
as adults. So
almost as escorts.
Yes.
So there's two different categories here. And
people don't like it when you say that. They get very, very, very mad. Like, you're an apologist for a pedophile, but that's not it at all. No one has disagreeing or saying that Epstein is not a total creep and a horrible individual. That is not it. But what we're currently watching isn't what it's being kind of.
No, because especially if you follow any kind of leftist accounts, their big focus is like Trump is covering a pedophile ring. And I was like, that's not happening.
Yeah. You're right.
And we can save that maybe for an unfiltered or something like that because we need to wrap this up. But that is not the case. No. If you guys want my full thoughts, consider becoming a paying subscriber of It's Mercedes, where I have a newsletter.
Mercedes has all kinds of articles she's shouting out today. Just go subscribe to Mercedes. Just go do it.
So, but I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode. But I want to hear what you guys think. What do you think about this? I don't know, this debate, this battle that's going on the right. What do you think is going on with MTG and Massey? Do you agree? Do you disagree? I want to hear. We want a dialogue.
From you.
So drop it in the comments or shoot us a DM. You're more than welcomed. If you are a paying subscriber to Rivera and Reeves already, and you want to maybe get one of our Substacks also at a discount, shoot us a message and let us know. And we'll send you an exclusive link to our separate Substacks at a discount. So I've actually gotten quite a few of those. Welcome, friends. And if you're not a paying subscriber of Rivera and Reeves, I recommend that you consider it because you get a bonus episode, you get ad-free episodes, and you get access to this video a day early before YouTube. So
and you're supporting us, which we appreciate.
Yeah, because, you know, we're not big time here.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. Then we'll sell out, right, Rachel?
Right. Exactly.
But we will be back here on Thursday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. In the meantime, here is a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.